You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hello, you're listening to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM. Today's broadcast comes to you today from the stolen lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung peoples of the Kulin Nation and the Brabalung peoples of the Gunai Kurnai Nation. I would like to pay my respects to any First Nations listeners tuning in today and encourage all listeners today to learn about whose country you're on and what you can do to support MOB directly. Today, I'm bringing you part 3 of the Fingerboards Mine Struggle. This is an open-cut mineral sands mine that has been proposed by Gippsland Critical Minerals on the heritage-listed Mitchell River in Glen Allerdale on Brabalung country. In previous weeks, we heard from farmers and residents about the potential devastating effects of the mine on water, dispersive soils, and local farmers and residents. This week, we take a closer look at Gippsland Critical Minerals, which will include excerpts from a documentary, Minefield. Minefield was made in 2023 by Peter Vaughan of Barking Media. I think everyone needs to watch Minefield. It is a brilliant piece of media that delves deep into the bone-chilling horrors of mining in Victoria. Special thanks to Mindfreak Glen Allerdale for sharing a copy of this documentary. In 2014, concerned residents, farmers, and community members came together to protest this mine, which was then proposed by Calbar Operations. After a lengthy and complicated struggle, the mine proposal was shelved in 2021. In 2023, Calbar Operations was rebranded into Gippsland Critical Minerals, and the mine is being pushed once again, with a test pit set to go ahead in January 2026. The rebranding, according to Gippsland Critical Minerals, was, quote, to reflect its focus on critical minerals and its commitment to the Gippsland region, and to signify a renewed commitment to community engagement, environmental sustainability, and delivering long-term benefits to the local community and beyond, end quote. When Gippsland Critical Minerals was Calbar Operations, they had a fraught relationship with the community. Here are some excerpts from Minefield, starting with the former CEO, Victor Hugo.
We definitely recognise that we need to build a reputation within the community or to become trustworthy. There's work to be done. And the reality is that's not done through what we say, it's done through what we do.
I don't believe you. All right, well, you may not believe me, but this is based on...
Councillors, I respectfully request that you consider your legal position.
Controversial ex-mayor Joe Rutino is a National Party influencer and supporter of Calbar. Joe dismisses the community and blames the opponents of the mine for a list of human disasters.
3 minutes is up.
Simply put, emotional and reactive type thinking is our system one type of our brain working, and has been blamed for such disasters as Chernobyl reactor disaster, the Apollo spaceship disasters, and most recently the global financial crisis.
Councillor Marianne Peltz also supports the mine. She owns a large log trucking company that could profit from carrying Calbar's ore, but she's refused to abstain from the vote.
So the bottom line for me as to why I wanted to rescind this motion was the community's opposition to the proposed mineral sands mining proceeding in the East Gippsland region. Who is to say that mineral sand mining is not appropriate to be done in Tubbert, Genoa, or any of our other outer regions or any other region? This issue is purely a site-specific concern.
That's not fair.
Excuse me, I asked you to be quiet in the back because we've listened to you now for an hour and a half and you've had your say. My vote around the table actually counts.
Take that back.
Please stop calling out.
I've got a lot to say, thank you, and you can all be quiet while I say it.
Honestly, you have stuffed our lives for years now. We're over it. Do you even know how many people are going to be listening to your mess for the rest of their good life? Or do you even care? Do you care?
My view, I believe it's about the benefit that this project will bring to this region.
Since the rebranding at a new CEO, Michelle Wood, of Gippsland Critical Minerals, Mindfree Glen Allerdale still has found little has changed with their relationship to the company. One of the original concerns raised about Gippsland Critical Minerals when they were Kalbar Operations was that they were formed specifically for this mining project, meaning they seem on the surface to have no history and reputation as a mining company. The Minefield documentary did some digging into Kalbar, and this is what they turned up.
Kalbar Resources is a tiny unlisted Australian company that was created in 2011 by the directors of Hillgrove Resources Limited to siphon away profits from the sale of a controversial mineral lease in Indonesia. The corporate HQ of Kalbar Resources is a Perth-based office front completely devoid of staff. In fact, Kalbar Resources has never operated a mine before. It generates no real income, has no full-time employees, and has run at a loss since it was created. The company appears to be controlled by five shareholding blocks, including two obscure entities registered in the British Virgin Islands.
Today, Gippsland Critical Minerals is listed as a privately owned company and not listed on the Australian Securities Exchange, commonly known as the ASX. Being listed on the ASX means company shares are traded on a regulated market with the public able to invest. Private ownership of GCM blocks this. The ASX also brings a regulatory framework and extra fees to companies listed on it. This essentially binds companies listed on the framework to be more transparent on how they do business. So private listing combined the Australian government's and Victorian government's incredibly dodgy regulations and laws in the mining sector leaves an incredible amount of doubt as to whether the GCM will be transparent about its practices and whether it will follow up on any of its promises to the communities. Two known shareholders in GCM are Resur Limited, with an unclear amount of shareholding, and the other, and probably more important shareholder, is Appian Capital Advisory, with a 20% shareholding. This is from Appian's website. Quote, Appian has a track record of investing in high-quality projects around the world, including rare earths, potash, gold, copper, nickel, cobalt, lead, zinc, and mineral sands. Appian's strategic investments have consistently supported projects from inception to successful production and rehabilitation, understanding their commitment to responsible development of minerals projects. Resur Limited might give you some confidence in the project when you ask Gippsland Critical Minerals about them, because according to Gippsland Critical Minerals, Resur Limited is, quote, an Australian-owned company with extensive mining expertise. It represents about 150 quote-unquote mum and dad shareholders, indicating a broad base of individual investors. Resur was the original owner of the Kalbar project, which is now Gippsland Critical Minerals. Resur Limited is another rebrand of Kalbar Limited, and Kalbar came into existence only for this project. So At least the same players from the previous fraud proposals seem to be at play here. And good luck finding more information online as to who these 150 mum and dad shareholders with their extensive mining expertise actually are. Appian Capital Advisory, however, has a lot more information online, and they seem like the foreign driving force behind the project. Also, they actually have a website. They have one office in Perth. However, the only project they seem to be involved with in Australia is the Fingerboards mine. In fact, they have a brilliant piece of greenwashing on their website, which presents a pitch that the Fingerboards mine as a project is good for the environment and is needed to reduce our reliance on China for rare earth minerals for building our new eco-friendly world. Except, we don't know who exactly is going to be purchasing these minerals. They very well could end up going to China. This is not a publicly owned mine as well, so as we've covered in previous weeks, there is absolutely no guarantee of benefits to the Australian people and its economy. Now will be a good time to point out that Gippsland Critical Minerals was not the first company interested in the mineral sands in Glen Allerdale. Rio Tinto had already studied the site in 2014. So this again raises the question as to whether or not the mine will be all it is promised to be. In the Minefield documentary, there is a satirical moment that sums this up. A note here that some of the information in the following segment is conjecture and satirical in nature.
Here at Kalbar, we're allegedly in the business of buying up cheap mineral exploration leases, dressing them up as fancy mining projects, getting government approvals, then selling them off to gullible investors for a huge profit. Are you looking to invest in a mining project that seems too good to be true? Well, come on down to the $4 billion world-class Fingerboards mineral sand mine. We've got zircon, titanium, rare earth metals, and they all have to go to China. Forget that in 2012, Rio Tinto, a real mining company, decided this deposit wasn't viable to mine. Forget their comprehensive study and drilling that found the minerals here are not profitable to mine because they're too contaminated and radioactive. Forget any chance of selling this contaminated sand unless you sell it far below the actual cost of production. Rio Tinto was wrong to say this deposit was a dud because we've found a hidden strata of rich mineral sand that they must have somehow missed. Now you're thinking, but Kalbar, the geologist who found this hidden strata, is one of your directors and a major shareholder in your company. But don't worry. Here's our CEO to clear things up.
Is there a conflict of interest? How can you expect investors to believe that the geologist, who's a major shareholder and a director of Kalbar, doesn't have an interest in making it look like there's a lot of valuable minerals underground?
The short answer is no, there's no conflict of interest.
That's a bulletproof guarantor, if ever there was one. So come on down to the Fingerboards Mineral Sand Mine, an amazing investment opportunity. You can trust Kalbar.
We're talking about ecological thinning and subsidised logging, but we basically mean the same things, don't we, here?
Wherever there are chemical corporations around the world, they're constantly trying to chip away at regulations.
Earth Matters, bringing you environmental and social justice stories, from developments in government and industry to the campaigns and communities that are standing up to them. Earth Matters plays at 11 a.m. Sunday and 6:30 a.m. Wednesday. Turn your dial to 855 a.m. or listen online at 3cr.org.au.
While the headlines have subsided, the nuclear power plant is still not under control, with the spent fuel rods removed from only one out of four reactors.
Law needs to change so that our rights can be recognised, so that decisions in relation to the use and exploitation of our lands is out.
You are what you eat, and you are what you eat.
Local Food Connections interviews with food producers, backyard growers and urban farmers. Join us every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio 855 on your AM dial, on 3CR Digital Radio and live streaming on 3cr.org.au/streaming. Local Food Connections, a show about the importance of local food in sustainable communities.
Goes from dust to dust. You gotta just trust that upper crust, then maintain that good terrain from whence you came.
Welcome back. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM. We've been diving into Who Are Gippsland Critical Minerals, featuring the brilliant and bone-chilling documentary Minefield by Barking Media. In this episode and in previous episodes, you've heard environmental effects statement mentioned, and there's a brilliant little excerpt from Minefield that explains what that is.
Before Kalbar can get a license to mine, it needs to complete an environmental effects statement, called an EES. This is part of the Victorian Government's token development approvals process. An EES is supposed to examine all the environmental and social threats of a proposed development and help inform the minister when they make a decision. But the process is biased, because all the studies in an EES are done by the developer and their paid consultants, and not by independent experts. The Environmental Effects Law was created in 1978 and has never been reformed. It's now hopelessly out of step with modern science and community standards. It's an outdated relic of the 1970s, when communities were locked out of government decision-making and concepts like climate change and biodiversity were little known. Australia was still hunting whales, logging rainforests, spraying DDT, and plundering natural resources with little concern for the environment. Victoria's Environmental Effects Law gives the Planning Minister executive power to recommend if a project should be approved. And unlike most other laws, the public can't even appeal his decision in a court. The mining industry helped write the original EES law, and for 44 years, they've lobbied successfully to prevent any reform. and of the 40 mining projects that have required an EES in Victoria, only one has ever been stopped by the government.
We now turn to some current issues and problems that Mindfree Glen Allerdale are facing that I recorded in my initial trip out there.
The company has just held four drop-in sessions, and the mining company has said, so many people attended each one. They've exaggerated the numbers. We had people inside and outside monitoring those numbers. So they're telling lies about that. So what else are they trying to put over the community, as far as the project goes itself? Yeah. So it's very hard, and there's a lot of mistrust now with this mining company. And community engagement is one of the criteria for them getting a mining license.
Yeah.
Resources Victoria made that the criteria for that. And yet, the way they're going about it, they've also run webinars, and it was pointed out in the environmental effects statement for the other proposal that people in this area had trouble with internet connection and also the technological experience to actually take part in those. I mean, we know ourselves, we cannot do webinars on our internet connection at all.
Yeah.
It just fades in and out and you can't hear anything. So they've completely ignored those concerns by the community. So it's just ridiculous that we're not getting heard. They're not taking any notice of us, and they refused to have a public meeting because they said they felt threatened. So, and they've made claims against Mindfree Glen Allerdale, which are unfounded, and so the community is sort of missing out on this information and doesn't have the opportunity really to actually get that information, or what information they've got, which is fairly sparse anyway.
I mean, the mining company is claiming that the 900 proposals, submissions to the EES that opposed the project was not representative of the community, but is now claiming that the grossly inflated figure of 90 people who attended their community reference groups, their drop-in sessions, is representative. So 900 isn't, but 90, which is actually more like 40, is. So somewhere the maths doesn't add up. They've set up a community reference, what they call a community reference group. Now, some of those people live more than 100 kilometres away, and one of them's an ex-employee who probably has shares in the company. So it's a very, very... greenwashing is the word that comes to mind.
Yes, yeah. Well, it's really just a... I don't know if you've ever seen that ABC show, Utopia, where the guy's like, oh, we're going to do this, this and this, and they just sort of gaslight him and tick boxes and not actually do anything. Yeah.
Gaslighting is actually a really good term. I was talking to a psychologist and she was saying that that's a standard policy by mining companies. It's gaslighting the community.
Yeah.
Feed them partial information, false information, and get the right mix of partial and false, and nobody knows what's true and what isn't.
Yeah. All good to go. The horticulture people.
Yeah, the horticulture, they had a presentation in town of the impacts of the mine on the horticulture industry, whether it be dust and various things. So we're reading through the 87-page impact statement on the hort industry, and we got to the page where they had dust impact on the baby leaf and broccoli and all sorts of veggies, and they compared it to the 6 mile dam at Noosa. And when we got really down into it and read the fine print, it was to do with the dust on vegetation from it. They were building a dam for the water supply for this Noosa. And I don't know how you can compare dust on vegetation. We don't eat the leaves of trees or whatever, grass. So how can you compare that to food, the food industry down here on the valley? Like way out stuff. Really?
The other thing that they said at that meeting was that they grew beans in Lindenau in July. They're a summer and spring vegetable.
That's pretty common.
They're definitely not a winter vegetable
The document was drawn up by a person in Hobart. Who would never visit the horticulture industry on the Mitchell River Flats. And I offered to pay for her to come over and have a look so she can actually have a good look at the area and make a proper proper report. And I'm still can't understand how you can sit in an office in Hobart and draw up an impact statement of the vegetable industry on the Mitchell River Flat.
A couple of the other classics that, from that Hort report. One was that they were comparing the dust on the veggies with dust on avocados. Now, not many people eat avocado skins.
No.
Then they said that, it didn't matter if there was dust on the veggies because they're all washed. And then the horticultural QA man said, no, they're not washed because that buggers the shelf life. And then their final comment was, and not all of the horticultural area is actually under production because from the aerial photo we saw large areas of bare dirt. It's cropped all year round. They till the soil between crops. Of course there's going to be bare dirt between crops.
That's very questionable horticulture.
And these were experts.
Amy, at the beginning of this announcement, or just before this announcement of the renewal of the mining licences, the Mine Free Glen Ellerdale's website was hacked. And it was interesting what was taken or destroyed. It was all the 900 submissions that were put forward by the community that were in favour, were against the mine. And also any reference to the Chinese. So we're a little bit suspicious of who actually did that.
Yeah, that is, that is interesting.
I've been sitting there for 3.5 years, undisturbed.
Wow. Because the mining proponents had drawn up heads of agreement with a Chinese company about the processing. One of the things that was not discussed by the proponent during the EES hearings was the fact that we'd had a major bushfire through the area in 2014, just before the proponent came into the area. One landholder was literally standing in his paddock trying to work out what to do next with his burnt out farm when they came onto his property to ask to do drilling. His answer was short and sharp and to the point. This map shows the area that was burnt compared to the project area. You can see that probably 90% of it was actually burnt. That's had a big impact on the ecology within the area, and it takes a long time for that ecology to recover. It's what they call state and transition. You have a big disturbance, the environment will move through a number of transition states before it settles back down into a stable state. All of this area is still going through transition, but none of their ecologists actually even acknowledged there'd been a bushfire, let alone the fact that it was moving through a range of transitions in the process. That fire also traumatised a lot of people within the community because there were 66 properties impacted, three homes were destroyed, including ours. So those impacted landholders and people whose homes were destroyed, they've been dealing with the aftermath of the fire and then also trying to cope with this bloody stupid proposal as well. It's just been a grossly awful period.
I mean, this mine has been hanging over our heads now for 11 years already.
Yeah.
The whole area out where the mine is was burned out with a bushfire in 2014. And while some of the posts were still burning, the mining company came onto the land and was busy saying, oh, this is going to be our retirement fund.
Mm.
Talking to farmers who were still in a state of shock trying to work out how to rebuild their farms.
Yeah.
So a lot of farmers, including myself,
yeah,
haven't actually been able to rebuild the farm since that fire, because why would you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars rebuilding your business to then watch it being bulldozed into the ground?
Mm. Yeah.
It doesn't make economic sense, and the heartbreak involved is just phenomenal.
And the, obviously, considering it supplies so much food to the rest of Australia, it's not just as simple as affecting a local community that's out of sight and out of mind. It's a knock-on effect to the whole country.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is a statewide issue. It's a national issue.
Yeah.
The early in the process, the company had to do what they call an EPBC referral, which is a referral to the Federal Department of Environment. Their proposal basically said, oh, nothing to see, no problems here. The community put submissions in, and the quote back from the department was that there were an unprecedented number of submissions.
Mm.
And the net result was that the project has what they call four controlled actions.
Right.
That the federal government has to be satisfied that they'll look after.
Yeah.
And they were migratory species, because we have a lot of native vegetation in the area, so there's a lot of international and domestic migratory species come through the area.
Yeah.
Threatened species, and there are a lot of vulnerable or endangered species within the area. The impact on the Gippsland Lakes, which is a Ramsar listed wetland, and which is right on the cusp of ecological collapse. Yep. Anyway, and nuclear actions because of the nuclear ore that they're looking to yep, extract.
Yeah.
So all four of those are matters of national environmental significance.
So maybe you've also got other industries such as dairying and yep, beef and lamb production and sheep production, wool production. So if any contamination happens with those, they'll lose their quality assurance,
yep,
as the vegetable farmers will,
yep,
and it'll jeopardise even more economic
yep,
disarray in the area. So, it's a real problem.
The company located its wind monitoring behind a shelter belt.
Right.
That tells you everything you need to know about the integrity of the company. That's another one of the dams that never dries up.
For people who don't know what a shelter belt is, what is that?
It's a line of trees designed to cut the wind.
Yeah.
So it looks like a shelter belt now. It was actually an entire blue gum plantation that was cutting the wind to their wind monitoring station. So they were then able to try and say, oh, but we don't get severe winds here.
Yeah.
In addition, mysteriously, when we did have severe winds, their wind monitoring station used to break down.
Mm.
And instead of substituting data from neighbouring stations, they just put random numbers in. So their data was completely skewed.
And that's all we have time for today. Tune in next time to learn more about the beautiful diversity and ecology that exists at the site that is under threat from the new proposal from Gippsland Critical Minerals to do the same old project that Kalba was trying to get away with. If you missed the recent screening by Lasnet of Minefield in Naam, then why don't you come over to Geelong on October the 10th at 6 p.m. at Geelong Trades Hall, where Socialist Alliance will be holding a screening of the film for community. We need to take action to stop Gippsland Critical Minerals and any other mining companies from going ahead with a mine at the fingerboards. And furthermore, we need to see a complete overhaul of environmental legislation, laws, and protections. It's time to put the people's interest over corporate interest, and to stop the continued ravaging and pillaging of resources from stolen Indigenous land. Stay tuned for Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence, and see you next week for part 4.
Look at his jeans, dude. That's an unmistakable bulge of a large penis in those jeans.
Yeah, there's a dick in those pants.
Dick in those pants. Yeah, I'll be right back. Are you broken? Give me a second. Thanks. Is that a penis in your pants?
Yeah.
You lied to me.
I'm a sicko. I'm a sicko, yeah. It's exactly what you believe. You saw right through me for the sake of all that is sensible. I should have known it all come crashing down. There's such a simple answer. Don't we all agree? It's so simple. Can't you see? If this is your calling, I guess I respect your beliefs. Do what you wanna do. Be who you wanna be.
Hello, and you're back with me, Amy, on Kill Your Lawn, Kick Your Fence, 3CR, 885 AM. That was Sicko by Dovesa, Dove, not D-O-V-E, but the Irish spelling of D-U-B-H-E-S-S-A, Dove, Dovesa. And so, I caught them the other week at a fundraiser. Awesome trans group and band. I thought they had a really original sound. And yeah, check them out on Bandcamp. I'll put links in the show descriptions for today.
Also, just a little note, I was on Uncle Robbie's The Black Block on Monday, and I was chatting to him about this mine issue, and I also came along with Julie Saylor-Briggs, who's been on the show before, talking about First Nations issues and justice, and also from her Torres Strait Islander perspective. So tune in to catch Monday's episode of Black Block, and I will also chuck that in the links. But yeah, we can get a First Nations perspective on the Mitchell Mine, Fingerboards Mine issue on the Mitchell River from a First Nations person, Uncle Robbie Thorpe, who's from that country. He is Gunai Kone, Gunai Konai, Kratunalong. So moving on, we have a guest in this show, and that guest's name is Alex. Hey, Alex, how are you?
Hi, Emmy. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. People may remember that I've had a few members of the APR Collective, mm-hmm. the Alliance for Praxis Research Collective, although I think one of them is more focused on her Greens campaigning now.
Yeah, Rachel. Yeah. She was part of the group founded with us. Life takes us
to so many different directions. Yeah. Yes. Alex, might just tell us a little bit about yourself and remind our listeners who the Alliance for Praxis Research are.
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Alexandre Faustino. You might recognize that's like a Portuguese speaking, but I'm Brazilian. I came from Brazil with a Northeastern Brazilian ancestry, and have been living in Nam for the past 6 years almost now.
Yeah.
Came for my PhD, so yeah. That was the initial purpose. And by being involved in academia and pursuing research here and trying to understand what is this place and the institutions that are here and who is living also this moment, found this shared kind of bit of a struggle with what are the possibilities of actually participating in changes and building solidarity relationships that are more action driven for influence in the context that we are immersed. I think that was a common purpose that draw us together for what later became APR, the Alliance for Practice Research. Yeah.
And you all have like a bit of a focus on sort of urban areas and urban planning and development. Do you want to tell us just a little bit about your specific field of research?
Yeah, absolutely. Could say broadly speaking, I would tell like water person.
Yeah, water person, yeah.
Water is still like the main issue, question that has carried through my different stages of training, learning, and professional life. Mostly academic, but I come from a mixed background of first studying environmental management analysis, turning that to more environmental urban focus towards the end of my degree, understanding, you know, how cool cities are, but how problematic they are and how deeply entangled they are in the issues that we are facing ecologically, environmentally in the planet. So obviously, let's engage with the urban question. Had a journey through urban planning, architecture, landscape, but by engaging in those areas, always looking into water. Okay, what's happening with our rivers, water resources, and what cities are doing with those? Also realizing it's not necessarily a lack of understanding the problem or the missing a new framework to try to do things differently. At the point I was studying, that had a lot. I realized, okay, there's a lot already done and said. More said than done. So what's missing in the action that took me into participating more in process that were actually debating, okay, how can transition from this concrete base, heavily infrastructured water infrastructures to a more sustainably managed system, and realizing it's an actual political, social, cultural struggle that holds the knots many times. And that more power political question took me on the pathway for my PhD that found geography, urban and human geography as a home, because I was particularly interested in how organized community, grassroots movements play a pivotal role in promoting the changes that we often just are so desperate for.
Yeah. An example is the Mitchell River mine that I'm covering at the moment. it's, you know, it will literally devastate if it goes ahead the local river system of Mitchell River Lakes, which will then flow on to the Gippsland Lake. So it's a very potential devastating thing. But there's also the farmers are already having to face facts about the climate crisis and about the fact that the river, as it's being currently used, will dry up.
Yeah.
So it's sort of interesting as well that, you know, there's that line of inquiry of, you know, this mine is devastating. But then also once the mine is sort of put to rest, then looking towards the future about agricultural operations, local town watersheds use and damming and all that kind of stuff, those are questions that they're going to have to face, the local people, Gunai Kurnai people and the residents and farmers.
Yeah.
But we're going to actually, we're going to do this show, this interview in two parts. So after the show today, I'm going to take Alex into a, you don't mind me saying Alex, I can't.
No, yes, I forgot to say, yeah. call me Alex.
Yeah. Basically, we're going to do an interview all about your work and some of the relationships between this colony and your colony. But today we're going to talk about an event the Alliance for Praxis Research is involved with and setting up, which is happening, tomorrow. Yeah. Yes. So tomorrow's, it's called Projections of a Current Future, I should say. And then it has, I can't read it because it's in a spiral.
No, I'll read it. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for inviting us to talk about this. It's a very, special project for us. So it's called, there's a double title there, but there is the Projection of a Current Future name, and there's also the Bunurun name for it, Komagi, Yulenj, Bareng, Garaba. Mm-hmm. So this is the result of an ongoing collaboration that the Alliance for Praxis Research, the APR Collective, has developed with Professor and Senior Elder Narwit Caroline Briggs.
Yep.
Which you might have heard of her many different spaces and times. And
I wonder if she's related to my pal, Julie Saylor Briggs.
Oh, let's just trace that.
Yeah.
It started from that relationship, which previous, collaborations we've done with her for other moments here in Melbourne, Melbourne Zen Week. But it was always speaking to our relationship to this land, and to our responsibilities as migrants into another settler colony, and that responsibility to build solidarity and responsible relationships with traditional owners of this land. But Narwit especially was always very generous and a dear friend, and she, for those who met her, you know how much energy she brings and how much she always wants to do. And I think we just found a resonance with some of our ethics and questions, actually. Like, we are a big group talking a lot about water. And the purpose of this work, essentially, was to, how can we invite more people on this journey to have a critical understanding and experience of what is this urban image of this place now called Melbourne.
Yeah.
What has been the impact of this transformation, this violent transformation of this land over the culture, the Bunurun culture, the Wurundjeri culture, the indigenous cultures. But here now, which is guiding us in that journey. So
what does the journey look like?
The journey, it's a flow.
Okay.
Because again, water is the main agent carrying us here. And it's a flow because we are tracing the rivers that are still existing in the city, although you don't see them on the surface unless it's a heavy storm. So we are following the Williams Creek, which is underneath Elizabeth Street.
Yeah.
Some people know about that, but many don't. There is a river running underneath Elizabeth Street, which actually
there is. And sometimes Elizabeth Street floods.
Exactly, and that's the river.
Yeah. Uncle Robbie actually has taught us about that one. Yeah.
Yes. And it starts when you start mapping and trying to understand, you know, what is this river, where is it coming from? It kind of has a diffuse origin from what is now Parkville campus of University of Melbourne.
Yeah.
So our journey starts there, in a place called Concrete Lawn. And it's an occupied lawn because it was actually a marsh, later a lake. And then you cannot build heavy buildings on top of that. So just put concrete on top and call it concrete lawn. So it's just very interesting narrative there. So this is going to be a flow downstream. And to also, you know, connect with that experience of how water moves because of also the topology of the land, we're inviting people to come on their bikes. So you can also just flow downstream as we are pursuing, following the path of Williams Creek. And we're also doing that because not it's a journey, not only for us, but it's a journey for the ilk, the eels.
Yes, the eels are so important.
Exactly.
Do you want to tell us a bit about the eels?
Yes, I can. And that was a bit of like the genesis of the project as well. Narwit's story of the journey of the eels, which are still, of course, present in all this territory here and still present even in the highly transformed urban landscape with so many challenges for them to continue that migration. But yeah, eels have this fascinating life cycle with a massive migration. They start as, you know, larvae after fertilization in the coral sea. They don't have their, you know, strong mobility, so they are carried by strong oceanic currents back down to where their ancestors swam. Have to wait very particular, specific environmental conditions, moon alignments, salinities and temperatures of the water until they might switch again from salt water to fresh water. And in each phase of that movement, a lot of metamorphosis happen in their bodies, and they change in different to different cycles, steps of their life cycles. They have to cross many barriers like waterfalls. They have to climb rocks, cross dams sometimes, but at some point they still find a freshwater body where they will remain for their growing phase of life, which can take 20 years even to grow and mature. Until again another trigger factor makes them swim downstream and start the cycle again to spawn back in the coral sea. So there's still observations and moments where people have seen eels even passing over the grasslands in University of Melbourne campus because the creek is there and eels have even this ability of breathe out of water. They can slither for a few kilometers even. So yeah, we're very curious about the existence and life of the eels in this, even in this such a heavily transformed landscape as Melbourne is, but all just wanting to draw more people into that conversation to say, Can we make the well-being of these creatures and of the whole ecologies of this place a bit better? Try to understand how they have been affected and acknowledge their resistance and their capacity to be here still, despite of all these violences.
And so, describe to us what the installation that you've made.
So to share the story, we working with Narwit and with what she wanted to share with everybody, edited four key chapters that take the audience in this journey. So we started at the University of Melbourne. We've continued downstream with the river with a festive flow. So that's why we're swimming as a group together to mark the presence of the river. And then we have another second stop at Queen Victoria Market, that intersection where you see the tram right in front of Queen Victoria Market across the community center. Then we continue through Elizabeth Street into Burke Street. So we're watching across the GPO building, that H&M building, the GPO building projecting into the building across Burke Street. We continue down into Flinders Station, where we actually cross underneath Flinders Station until we reach the point where Williams Creek encounter Birrarung, the Yarra River. And there we finish in the final chapter. So in each four chapters, we have part of the story of Narwit being shared. It's not just the ilk, journey of the ilk, but also her experience and her understanding and of the city as it is now, and the memories, ancestral memories of Bunurong people. But then we have these other layers of animating that oral storytelling with visuals designed by Narwit's granddaughter, Amina Briggs.
Okay.
So this has been, you know, a collaboration between her as well.
Yeah.
And animated into video and soundscapes that are projected on the sites. So you see, like, this work begins to become like a massive collaboration with so many partners. We have Sean Healy animating these designs from Amina, Little Projector Company, that came together with us to think about the, you know, installation of these projections. So many hands have been involved, and many other supporting us, like people who said, yes, please use our site, use our building, come and do this work. And of course, Melbourne Fringe Festival, who welcomed this idea like about 2 years ago. So this project has been presented as part of the Deadly Fringe program, and they gave us support to develop it, and gave us the platform of the festival. So we invite everyone to join. There's two main nights happening where, you know, a big crowd is doing this movement together. So tomorrow, the Saturday, starting at 7 p.m. And the next,
that's the cycle one?
That's the cycle.
Yeah.
And the second one, the next Saturday, is a walk.
Yeah.
But we've been sold out for the capacity of these two.
Oh, amazing. Congratulations.
Yes. But still, this is also a continuous installation. So the sites will remain activated with these projections until the 16th of October.
Yeah.
So people can come at any time from, let's say, 8 p.m. until 11 p.m. because we need, you know.
Is it like a public tour, like walking through the streets?
Yes. Okay, you can do a self-guided tour.
Yep,
so
yep.
In each site, you can find a QR code to take you to the page where you'll find the audios and also transcripts of the story. So people who want to come on their own time, bring your phone, headphones, and just follow the journey with the pace you want, or just come to one chapter, the chapter you like to check. But people can interact with until
amazing.
The 16th. Anyone passing by the city will hopefully see it. And
and where can people go to learn more?
So we're directing to our pages from APR. So
I'll put links in the show notes today.
Great. So always posting on our Instagram, APR Collective.
Yep.
And we also have our website, which is also aprcollective.com.
Yep.
And there's a dedicated page for the Fringe project there, for projections of our current future. And there we'll have all the content and directions for the sites.
Yeah, I have one more question for you, but we're going to go to a short ad before we do that.
On Sunday the 19th of October, Be True Geelong will be hosting a rally to stand against hate and racism at Transvaal Square from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Come along and listen to community leaders and First Nation elders and join us for a march and yarning circle. After that, join us at 6 p.m. at the Geelong Platform Arts for our second screening of Our Warrior, the story of Robbie Thorpe. Follow us on Facebook at Be True Geelong for more information. Be True Geelong is a proud 3CR supporter. MC
Books, Black Folly Entertainment.
Yarra Bug Radio, 10 to 10:30, every Monday morning on 3CR Community Radio. All things to do with cycling in Yarra region and around Melbourne. Listen in.
Welcome back. You're listening to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence. We are on the last stretch of the episode now. Before you think again, we've just been talking to Alex about this amazing event on Melbourne Fringe Festival. And I just had one question for you. It's just a bit of a philosophical question about the event. So what people are experiencing is, because it's sort of related to this show, Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence, sort of tearing down these constructs, tearing down these urban buildings and seeing what was there before. And that's really fun. It's almost like an X-ray or a ghost of the past. How do you find that?
It's for us who, you know, understand the importance of this, of sharing that knowledge, of and inviting people to reflect in that space. It's exciting because it's like, okay, you have the opportunity to tell this thing, but it's also there's many dimensions that are hard to digest because you are being confronted with the violences, with the illusions in which we keep living and reproducing.
Trying to force a city onto a river.
Yep. Yes, yes. Understanding the how that comes layered with the impact on the cultures that were here before and that still are here, but just experience this profound disconnection and don't see, you know, themselves in this place and struggle a lot to even connect the narrative and the knowledge that they carry with this so transformed landscape now. But just takes in the new journey of... because it's not only a discussion about, you know, coming back to what it was before. It's understanding what was before, so we can have possibly make better decisions about where we want to go next.
Yeah.
Do we want to keep reproducing a trajectory that we've been, you know, experiencing for a couple of decades, I could say. It's not that long. Or can we, you know, find shared intentions and values that, you know, put that energy into shifting a bit direction to something that meant some of those ruptures that were caused. But yeah, it's interesting as we, you know, how, and then you go into the space of how can we convey that through this art form? How can you, you know, provoke emotions that resonate this type of experience and this type of knowledge? And that's where it gets exciting as well to do work like that, which is not just like writing a paper about this issue, but it's thinking how do you reach people's hearts? What's the role of color, of image, of sound, of movement, and of seeing that in place and not sitting on a theater talking about, you know, imaginary space, but you are hearing the story about this place. You are hearing ancestral knowledge about something that is right here, a couple of centimeters beneath our feet, literally. When you are in the last stop of the tram lines at Elizabeth Street, just facing...
going to have to finish up there because I have to let the next crew in.
We'll continue.
Okay. I should have let you know. We'll continue in the next, in our part two. But folks, thank you for listening. Head to APR Collective's website. Thank you, Alex. And stay tuned for Think Again. This is Poison Planet.
Thanks so much.
No worries.
Okay.
When the lights go down, no life is around. This world we treasure will last forever.
Not forever.
Our world is neglected. Save our souls. Don't want to die in
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.